And we return now to our ongoing coverage of the opioid crisis in America. Depending on where you live in the United States, the crisis can look very different. And that matters when it comes to how local officials are confronting it. Take Oregon, for example. Opioid-assisted overdoses have dropped 20% from their peak a few years back. Sarah Rothenflug from Oregon Public Broadcasting gives us an overview.
Oregon set up a task force to really push new guidelines. They push clinics and hospitals to change their prescribing practice, push doctors to incorporate pain management into their continuing education efforts, and emphasize the use of prescription drug monitoring. There's a website in which doctors can trace the use of opioids, not just here in Oregon, but across the river into Washington as well. Doctors have also worked hard to provide people who are suffering from long-term chronic pain with lots of alternative ways of managing that. Acupuncture, physical therapy, eating healthy, even a fascinating thing with virtual reality.
So that appears to be a brightening picture in Oregon, but in Ohio, things feel less hopeful. The state is second only to West Virginia in its rate of drug overdoses. Marlene Harris-Taylor of IdeaStream gives us the snapshot from Cleveland.
There's still 11 people a day dying from drug overdoses in Ohio, and there's no signs that the crisis has hit its peak. That's what we're hearing from state officials. Medical examiner's offices are struggling with overcrowding in the morgues. In some communities, they're having to bring in trailers to store bodies. And pain pills, heroin, and cocaine are being laced with a powerful synthetic opioid called fentanyl. In fact, the Ohio Department of Health put out an advisory about fentanyl because last year in 2017, 71% of all unintentional drug overdose deaths involved fentanyl or fentanyl analogs in the state. So some people say it's no longer a heroin crisis in Ohio. It's now a fentanyl crisis in Ohio.
Marlene Harris-Taylor of IdeaStream in Cleveland there. Finally, we move to Rochester in western New York, where Evan Dawson of WXXI has an update from an area hit hard by the crisis.
The surge in heroin and opioid deaths here happened in 2016 when more than 200 people died, up from around 80 the year before. The average age of overdose death here is 36, but it ranges from the teens to 76. So heroin is a huge problem, but so is opioid addiction in patients who were simply trying to manage pain. And our county executive has appointed a physician's council to offer a medical approach to the crisis that involves re-educating the public about our expectations for managing pain. In other words, opioids will be available in cases of acute pain, but doctors would like to start moving patients to other treatments. That's going to be difficult for existing patients who have to rely on opioids, and it's a challenge for a public that has been told for years that they can expect to live without pain.
So, a focus on prescriptions in western New York, a fentanyl crisis in Ohio, and some hope for alternative treatments in Oregon. Three states, three different pictures of the opioid crisis and the efforts to ease it. Well, Herman Lopez is here with me now. He's senior reporter for Vox. Herman, you heard those three dispatches from three states, all corners of the country. What's your reaction?
I'm not really surprised, just based on what we've seen with the opioid crisis so far. The way I look at it is there are three things that you want to look at a state to see whether it will have a big opioid problem today. One, did it originally have a painkiller problem? That's the first thing. Two, did it have an initial heroin market? So like particularly in a state like Ohio, Columbus already had a fairly large heroin market, and that made it easy for heroin to spread across the state. And then three, does it have good access to treatment? This is something that we see across the state. Some states are better than others. New York City, for example, has a lot of methadone clinics already, whereas in Ohio, they have really bad access to treatment in general, and that's created more problems.
Well, let's talk more about the response, Herman. States look to other states for best practices, things that are working. Who's doing this right? What state is really leading the way in responding to the crisis here?
So I just mentioned New York, which is doing pretty well. But I think one of the best examples here is Vermont, which they built what they call a hub and spoke system, essentially. And that's just a fancy way of describing what they really did is just integrated addiction treatment into the rest of the healthcare system. So normally, if you look at addiction care in the U.S., it's really fragmented. There aren't really strong regulatory standards. This is a huge problem, particularly in places like Florida, where there are all these addiction, quote unquote, clinics that essentially are scams. There's might not even be a doctor on staff. Vermont took this approach where through the healthcare system, they really funded an increase in providing better treatment for opioid addiction with a focus on medications like buprenorphine and methadone, which are considered the gold standard of treatment. And the people within their care saw dramatic, we're talking 90%+ decreases in opioid use and overdoses. The important thing to emphasize here is that all Vermont really did is they took the evidence we already have and just put more money and more infrastructure behind it through the healthcare system. They didn't come up with something that like no other state knew about. They just really built up their addiction treatment, added some regulations and rules to it, and integrated into the rest of the healthcare system.
Well, that's fascinating because the early heroin crisis, the latest wave of it, I mean, 8-10 years ago, hit Vermont especially hard. You're saying they're responding quite well. Can other states just replicate this? Vermont is a small state for sure, but can they just export this model?
Some states are actually looking at taking Vermont's model. The biggest thing seems to be political will. So like I just mentioned, it's not that we, in general, don't know what to do about it. We do know that buprenorphine, methadone, naltrexone, these are medications that really do work to like address opioid addiction. In studies, people who are on these medications see a 50% plus drop in their mortality rate, which is really impressive in general for any medical intervention. The biggest thing seems to be political will. So there are two challenges here. One is funding. But the second thing, and this is what when I went to Vermont and asked the officials there about this, they said that the biggest thing was actually just overcoming stigma. A lot of people still do not see addiction as a medical problem. They do not see these medications as a good solution to that problem. So there's all this stigma attached to addiction still. And when you're dealing with that, it's a lot harder to convince state officials to really build up their addiction treatment systems.
Well, Herman, states take different approaches to this crisis. You know, in some states, there are different approaches to liberalization of marijuana laws, Colorado, California, other places as well. I want to play you a call from a listener in Colorado who's responding to reports that better access to marijuana may be helping in some cases.
My name is Dave, calling from Loveland, Colorado, and I'd say statistically, the opioid crisis is slowly improving in Colorado. Part of that's due to the legalization of marijuana and the cannabinoids within the plant that can help somebody with a plethora of ailments like arthritis, stress, eating disorders, anger, neuropathy, and even chronic pain.
Now, Herman, Dave is just one person from Loveland, Colorado. That's an anecdotal report. Is he onto something? What do the studies show?
There are some studies that show an association between looser marijuana laws and reduced opioid deaths. The one thing that's tricky here, and I actually just talked to a few experts about this in the past few days because it's something I'm looking into myself, and a lot of people just aren't convinced by this evidence yet because it's the old this is correlation, not causation thing. So one question, for example, is in these states that have relaxed their marijuana laws, they tend to be more liberal. So that might have made them more likely to say, let's increase the amount of naloxone, which is an opioid overdose antidote. Like, let's increase access to it. And the studies so far really have not been able to tear this all apart in terms of like what is actually causing the reduction in opioid deaths. So while the studies so far do seem a bit promising, I would say that the evidence is still fairly early and people should be cautious in interpreting it.
Well, Herman, the last time you and I talked, it was when the White House, when President Trump released a new framework for combating the opioid crisis from the top. It had lots of different aspects to it. That was, I think, about a month ago. Any impact in these states from the new White House initiatives?
So far, not really. I mean, in terms of what the White House suggested, they really wanted to do the criminal justice stuff. Trump really emphasized the death penalty for drug traffickers. We did see the Justice Department put out a memo asking federal prosecutors to essentially try to take up the death penalty more in big drug trafficking cases. It's not clear at all whether federal prosecutors will actually respond to that memo and like actually take it up. And in general, Trump had this opioid commission last year that made dozens of recommendations to deal with the crisis. And at best, he's maybe started on a handful of them. Senators from around the country, Senators Murray and Senators Warren, just sent out a letter this week asking the Trump administration to explain which of the recommendations it has done so far. They have not gotten a response. And in general, it's been like really hard to get the White House to answer this. What is the status on these recommendations? Are you pursuing them? because so far it doesn't seem like the White House has taken that much action. Congress has taken some action in terms of like putting more money towards the epidemic. The recent budget approved more than $3 billion for the next fiscal year for this, but it's not totally clear just how that money will go out yet and how effective it'll be, and that's something that remains to be seen.
Germán López, senior reporter for Vox. Germán, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And also big thanks to our friends at OPB, at IdeaStream, and WXXI for their dispatches there. They were part of the series Opioid Crisis, The Ripple Effect. We have a link on our website. And remember, you can find all of our opioid coverage on the website at thetakeaway.org/opioids. How is your community dealing with the opioid crisis?
I'm Jordan from The Dalles, Oregon, and I don't believe that it is improving. We're a small community, so drug addiction impacts us much harder, as we lack the resources of a larger city to help and mitigate drug abuse.
This is Frank from Westbury, New York. I live very near to Suffolk County, near Levittown, which I think is almost ground zero for the opioid epidemic. A lot of the children of baby boomers who work hard but maybe are not able to change with technology get depressed and start doing the drugs. I know a lot of halfway houses like Oxford House where they recover. But I know it's a very long, expensive, tedious process with a lot of relapse.
This is Michelle St. Clement. I'm calling from Traverse City, Michigan. The opioid crisis in northern Michigan has become a tremendous problem since the drug traffickers have been filtering up from downstate. Here in Traverse City, where I live, various professional agencies are collaborating and working diligently towards a solution. Our famous state theater will be holding a free viewing of a documentary film regarding the opioid crisis, and they'll be holding a panel discussion afterwards.
Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can always tweet us at The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.